CFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire,
and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Eggland's Best.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez. Hurricane Idalia made landfall on Florida's west coast a little over an hour ago as a dangerous Category 3 storm with winds of up to 125 miles an hour. CBS Tampa Bay meteorologist Amanda Pappas.
Idalia officially making landfall in Keaton Beach at 7:45 a.m. At this point, they're going to see that life-threatening storm surge in the Big Bend of Florida.
Could get up to 16 feet in places like coastal Crystal River, city manager Doug Baber.
The surge is going to be pushing in later today. The biggest part of the surge is going to be around 4:30. So what I just got from the EOC this morning due to the high tide. And so it's going to kind of give people a false sense of confidence that they can go out on the roads and everything's going to pass.
More from CBS Miami's Anna McAllister.
From the coast, this is in Cedar Key. Storm surge as it makes landfall. The National Hurricane Center says cities like Cedar Key will have catastrophic surge with 12 to 16 feet. Video shows the water rising under homes that are about 12 feet above ground. Streets were inundated as well. And that's the case south of Cedar Key as well. Water crashing over the Courtney Campbell Causeway that crosses Tampa Bay.
Power is out to more than 215,000 customers now. Idalia ties the record for the strongest hurricane ever recorded along Florida's Big Bend with the Cedar Key hurricane of 1896. In Washington, it is sentencing day for the leader of the Proud Boys, convicted of orchestrating the attack on the U.S. Capitol. Correspondent Scott McFarlane.
Enrique Tarrio of Miami wasn't actually here at the Capitol January 6th, but prosecutors successfully argued he plotted and planned the attack, celebrated it, and took credit for it. In seeking a 33-year prison sentence, the prosecution argues he was convicted of seditious conspiracy, plotting to block the peaceful transfer of power in America.
Some travelers are being warned about going into the U.S.
The Canadian government has warned members of the LGBTQ community planning to visit the U.S. they may be at risk, telling them to check relevant state and local laws. An online advisory links to a government webpage that emphasizes some foreign jurisdictions may target people based on their sexual orientation or gender identity. Similar public warnings are usually reserved for countries known for rights violations like Russia, Egypt, and Uganda. Steve Kathan, CBS News.
The Biden administration announced today it'll send $95 million to Hawaii to improve the state's electric grid after the Maui wildfire. The money will come from the bipartisan infrastructure law. S&P futures up too. This is CBS News.
Eggland's Best. The only eggs with more fresh and delicious taste, plus superior nutrition. Because the way we care is anything but ordinary. Only Eggland's Best.
I'm Tamron Hall.
Civic Media radio stations, providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call joined four other attorneys general in calling on 3M to pay more than the $10.5 to $12.5 billion in their original settlement to clean out PFAS contaminations they caused to the water supply. According to a press release, 3M also declined to pay the settlement amount quickly, insisting it be paid out over 10 years. The letter signed by the attorneys general says the new proposed settlement would be paid over 13 years, but the $10.5 to $12.5 billion falls well short of the predicted cost. 3M has also agreed to pay $6 billion to settle numerous lawsuits from U.S. service members who are experiencing hearing loss and other injuries after using faulty earplugs made by the company. The agreement marks a resolution to one of the largest mass torts cases in U.S. history, with hundreds of thousands of veterans and current service members suing the Minnesota-based company. 3M has lost 10 of 16 cases that have gone to trial regarding the faulty earplugs. For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west-northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Jerry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Hey, son. How are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ed Council and Pivotal Ventures.
It's What's on Tap for the Chippewa Valley. 93.5 The Tap. 93.5 The Tap.
Now we're getting somewhere. 8 minutes, well, 9 minutes now after 9 o'clock on this Wednesday morning. Steve Winwood, Higher Love, bringing us back into the Stu Daniels Show. And that song, by the way, went to number one on this date. Can you guess the year? Do you remember when it was? Well, if you guessed 1986, then you are correct. That's Steve Winwood, man. He had a string of hits in the 1980s. And, of course, a string of hits in the 60s and 70s as well. In the 60s with the Spencer Davis Group, and in the 70s with Traffic. And that guy's just been putting out great music for a long, long time. And still putting out good music and doing some shows these days, from what I understand, or at least popping up different places. Steve Winwood on a Wednesday morning. And let me give you some updated temperatures. 59 degrees in La Crosse right now, 55 in Richland Center, 51 degrees up in Hayward. Everybody looking for highs today in mid-70s. And let me ask my producer, Aaron, have you heard about this, this clause in the Constitution that may prevent Donald Trump from being listed on the ballots of states during the presidential election next year? Have you heard anything about this?
Is that Article 3 of the 14th Amendment?
Oh, come on, man. Do you know it that well? Is that, or did you just take a guess, or are you looking at something that has it listed? How did you know so well? How did you know so quickly?
Because I had heard a story about it previously that people were looking at that to see if he was, if they needed to invoke that or not.
Yeah, well, it does seem to be gaining some traction. So you are correct, sir. Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. That's exactly right. I guess as a producer of talk shows, you're going to pick up a lot of information. So you were totally correct on that. I've got a story here from the USA Today, and it says, could Donald Trump be off the 2024 ballot? Republicans in a crucial state struggle over the question. This was posted 5 hours ago at USA Today, and it was posted by Ken Tran. It says, Dateline Washington questions over whether former President Donald Trump is legally eligible to run for president have started to pick up steam in New Hampshire, where Republicans have been quarreling over Trump potentially being left off the state's 2024 primary ballot. The legal theory in question takes aim at Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, which says no one who has engaged in insurrection or rebellion or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof is allowed to hold public office. Some have argued that Trump's efforts to overturn the 2020 election and his actions before and during the Capitol attack on January 6th of 2021 fit that definition. It's an argument that has quickly picked up steam in the must-win Granite State. New Hampshire Secretary of State David Scanlon has requested legal guidance from the New Hampshire Attorney General's office, which is carefully reviewing the legal issues involved. Scanlon and Attorney General John Formella said in a joint statement on Tuesday, yesterday, but the officials clarified that they have not taken any position on whether the former president and current Republican frontrunner will be on the ballot in New Hampshire. Attorney Bryant Corky Messner, who was also the Republican nominee for the New Hampshire Senate race in 2020, called the theory very compelling in an interview with USA Today. He predicted Scanlon will be in a difficult position over the seemingly narrow legal issue that could have major ramifications on the 2024 Republican primary. Quote, he's very conscientious and serious about this, and he said he could not make a decision unless he had some legal guidance, and I agreed with him, Messner said. I absolutely agreed with him that he's in a difficult position without a court telling him how to interpret that. Trump's efforts to overturn the 2020 election and his actions surrounding the January 6th, 2021 attack on the Capitol, some legal scholars and his critics say disqualify him from running for president under the 14th Amendment. That includes pressuring election officials in key battleground states and accusations that he incited the Capitol riot, the Capitol attack, which was a riot, right? The theory gained traction after two conservative legal scholars endorsed it in a draft law review article published earlier this month. Quote, we think that if these constitutional duties are taken seriously, there is a list of candidates and officials who must face judgment under Section 3. Former President Donald Trump is at the top of that list. William Bode of the University of Chicago and Michael Stokes Paulson of the University of St. Thomas wrote, "Messner said the article really ignited me to essentially become an advocate for the Constitution." Shouldn't we all be advocates for the Constitution? The goal, Messner said, is not to disqualify Trump from the ballot, but to have the Supreme Court decide on his eligibility. If New Hampshire officials decide to allow Trump to appear on the ballot, Messner said he would partly finance a lawsuit and suggested proponents of the theory would sue in other states. Quote, "I think this ought to be nonpartisan, and it ought to be a focus on what the Constitution says," Messner said. "Of course, once you get into the legal system, it's an adversarial process, and each side can argue their cases, but ultimately, we need a judicial decision." The legal theory has garnered plenty of critics. Chris Ager, chair of the New Hampshire State Republican Party, in an interview with USA Today, denounced the push to keep Trump off the 2024 ballot. Ager, who is remaining neutral in the Republican primary, described the efforts as, quote, "an assault on American democracy," end quote. Well, what was the January 6th riot? And he also argued that Granite State voters should decide whether Trump is qualified for the presidency. Quote, "Whatever happened to letting the people decide? Let's let the people decide, and let's have a free, fair, open Donnybrook of an election, and whoever wins, let's rally behind them and move the country forward," Ager said. Sounds like he may be afraid of Trump coming after him. If Trump is on the ballot and Messner or another party tries to push the case all the way to the Supreme Court, Ager said the state Republican Party would likely intervene and join the legal battle. If the Secretary of State determines Trump can't be on the ballot, Ager said his party would join a lawsuit with the aggrieved candidate. The legal hypothesis is also controversial among Trump's Republican rivals seeking the White House. It says here one of Trump's opponents, presidential candidate and former Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson, has expressed support for the theory and said he expects multiple lawsuits across the country challenging Trump's candidacy. His quote, "I expect those lawsuits to be filed. I expect some states to take that action. And I think it's a serious jeopardy for Donald Trump under our Constitution of not being qualified." And he made that statement to on CNN's State of the Union. So what's going to happen with that? Sounds like it may be trouble for the former president. 18 minutes after 9 o'clock right now. Going to take a break. It's a quick one, so stick around. You are tuned in to the Stu Daniels Show.
On this side of the law, on that side of the law, who is right, who is wrong, who is for and who's against the law? Well, you see, I didn't really mean you any harm, but I simply couldn't make it on the farm. When the land won't give a lot, you gotta do with what you got, and all I got's the muscle in my arm. Well, I wouldn't ever hurt my fellow man, and mister, seems to me you'd understand. I'm just trying to help myself without hurting anybody else, and a man has got to do the best he can.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west, northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, could potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, sunshine, a high near 73. Mostly clear tonight, lows around 53. Sunny with a high near 79 on your Thursday. For Thursday night, partly cloudy, lows around 59. Friday, sunny, breezy, and a high near 87. Winds gust to 30 miles per hour. Right now, it's 58.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
Hear that lonesome whippoorwill. He sounds too blue to fly. The midnight train is whining low. I'm so lonesome I could cry. I've never seen a night so long when time goes crawling by. The moon just went behind the clouds to hide its face and cry.
Oh yes, it is Hank Williams. 22 minutes after 9 o'clock, I'm so lonesome I could cry. That song recorded on this date, August 30th. You have a guess on what year? Think about it for a second. Yeah, you got to go back further than that. Yeah, even further than that. I'm telling you, it was 1949. That's right. Recorded on this date in 1949. Hank Williams for you as we get back into the Stu Daniels Show. We've got 59 degrees in Eau Claire right now. Also 59 in Amory. And one of the stories I mentioned when we were discussing the headlines at the beginning of the show was the fact that UW-Madison is introducing a new program to train more pharmacists to help meet the healthcare needs of Wisconsin. And being a pharmacist these days, it's not all it's cracked up to be, that's for sure. I actually know a couple of pharmacists. And in recent years, over the past 10 years, with consolidation of drugstores and retail stores in general, their salaries have been cut, in some cases drastically, and their numbers are being cut quite a bit, and they're being way overworked, too. In fact, there's a news story in the news today about Walmart wanting to cut back hours of their pharmacists. And when you start cutting back people's hours, of course, they might start looking for a job at a different place. Also, what was in the news today about Walmart is the fact that they want to pay less money to the new pharmacists that they're bringing in. That being a pharmacist used to be a pretty lucrative career, and it should be, right? I mean, those are people that are handing out the drugs, and they got to know about chemistry and pharmacy and doctoring all at the same time, right? So those people, pharmacists, I believe should be paid, you know, equivalent for what they have to know.
Yeah, I have worked as a pharmacy technician for a while, and yeah. I just want to add in that, yes, pharmacists who do their job well are very smart, I worked with a lot of young ones right out of pharmacy school. And as you said, they have to know doctoring too, because sometimes the doctors will send in something that just doesn't make sense. And they call back and they're right. Like, oh, good thing you checked, because that was the wrong medication.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard those stories, and that can sometimes make the difference in not only getting better or not getting better, but in some cases it may be a matter of life and death. So thank you for mentioning that. I didn't know that you were a pharmacy technician. Do you still do that?
No, it was for maybe a couple of years in college mostly.
Yeah. Well, that's a great job to have when you're in college. That's for sure. But that's, you know, like I said, things have changed quite a bit in the world of pharmacy or pharmacists over the years. Let me give you a little bit of this story here from the University of Wisconsin-Madison news about their new program that may address, I don't know if it's actually going to address the difficulties that the pharmacists are putting up with these days, but at least it'll be good for the people of Wisconsin who need more pharmacists and well-trained pharmacists. The headline says UW-Madison launches PharmD Early Assurance, opening door for more Wisconsin pharmacists. And this was posted yesterday at UW-Madison News. It says the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Pharmacy is introducing a new program that aims to increase access to pharmacy school and train more pharmacists to help meet the healthcare needs of Wisconsin. This program, the PharmD Early Assurance Program, provides conditional admission to the UW-Madison Doctor of Pharmacy program for high school seniors who want to become a pharmacist and are admitted to a four-year UW System University. First semester undergraduates at any of the 13 UW System universities also are eligible for the program. This makes the early assurance program at UW-Madison unlike those and many other pharmacy schools, where a student must attend the same institution for both undergraduate studies and pharmacy school. Students from around Wisconsin are already taking advantage of this exceptional accessibility and flexibility. Quote, I'm so grateful for this opportunity to have my seat reserved at a top-ranked pharmacy school and be able to stay in the state, says Peyton Tots of Oshkosh, who is an entering freshman at UW Oshkosh and part of the inaugural PharmD Early Assurance cohort. And here's another quote. I want to help people and make a difference as a pharmacist, and I feel like I'm set up for success to do that with the Early Assurance program, which will open up more opportunities to more students like me who want to stay at home for undergrad, says Tots. I'm really excited to have a head start on my career path with a spot in the UW-Madison PharmD program. End quote. There's a little bit more to this story. I'll get to it after we take a break. Stick around. You're tuned in to your local Civic Media radio station.
Thanks for listening to your local Civic Media radio station. Learn more on our website, civicmedia.us.
CBS News special report, Hurricane Idalia, a powerful Category 3 storm, made landfall along Florida's sparsely populated Big Bend region a couple of hours ago, packing winds of up to 125 miles an hour, triggering massive storm surge. Cedar Keys downtown streets have been turned into a rolling river. correspondent David Begno is in coastal Crystal River.
County officials say in this location, Idalia could bring anywhere from 8 to 12 feet of flooding. We are also expecting extreme winds. I'm talking about 60 to 80 miles per hour with gusts that could be over 100 miles per hour.
State Emergency Management Director Kevin Guthrie.
First responders may not be able to reach you during the storm. You need to be prepared to take care of yourself and your family while you're sheltering in place. Ambulances, search and rescue teams, other first responders will get to you just as fast as we possibly can once the winds die down.
CBS News Special Report. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly. Wisconsin could soon have a new official state butterfly. A bill proposed by Wisconsin Representative Paul Tittle and Senator Rachel Cabral-Guevara would make the monarch butterfly the official Wisconsin state butterfly. They say the bill would acknowledge the monarch butterfly's importance to the state's agricultural economy, the state itself, and the country as a whole. Representative Tittle and Senator Cabral-Guevara are currently seeking co-sponsors for the bill. The uncertain future of funding for Wisconsin's Office of School Safety has left many worried that a 24/7 anonymous tip line will cease to exist in 2024. The tip line has been used for things as small as students vaping in schools or as large as harassment, bullying, and self-harm concerns. Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call says they're looking for state investment to keep the Office of School Safety running, but legislators don't seem to want to make that investment. For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly.
Kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west, northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
I would be remiss if I didn't say that some of what we do in government always is political. It has policy impacts. It has political impacts. But if your raison d'etre and your organizing principle is that my guy wins and your guy loses, the entire country suffers. That is not our call to serve. That is not what we raise our hand and say an oath.
The Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. It's never personal, only politics. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show with Dom and Crute. Weekdays from 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. This is 93.5 The Tap. 93.5 The Tap.
Glide so swift, rain won't lift, gate won't close, railings froze. Get your mind off winter time, you ain't going nowhere. Up your tent, you ain't going nowhere. Ooh-wee, ride me high, tomorrow's the day, my bride's gonna come. Oh no, are we gonna fly down in the easy chair? Oh,
and a gun that shoots tailgates and substitutes. Strap yourself to a tree with roots. You ain't going nowhere.
Right behind, tomorrow's the day my pride's gonna come. Oh, oh, are we gonna fly down in the easy chair?
Now Genghis Khan, he could not keep all his kings supplied with sleep. We'll climb that hill, no matter how steep, when we get up to it.
That's what I'm talking about. It's the Byrds doing a Bob Dylan song, as they did so well. They covered several Bob Dylan songs, had big hits with some of them, right? But that album, that song, You Ain't Going Nowhere, was released on an album that came out on this date, August 30th, 1968, Sweetheart of the Rodeo was the name of the album, and it was a groundbreaking album. If you were around back then, think about 1968, the music that was coming out at that time. We were at the height of the psychedelic movement, right? Really psychedelic stuff. All of the top 40 songs had that psychedelic thing to them. Even music from the Temptations was starting to sound a lot more psychedelic. And while all that was going on, the Byrds released this album of country-sounding music, very country-sounding music, and that really influenced a lot of what happened after that, bands like Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, and the Eagles. But that was the album for a lot of people that turned them on to that country style. Now, back in 1968, released on this date in that year. Hey, welcome back to the Stu Daniels Show. We got 9:36 right now. 62 degrees in La Crosse right now. Also up to 62 in Richland Center. Most areas looking for highs today in the mid-70s. And just before the break, oh, by the way, I should mention, if you have an opinion on anything we're discussing today, feel free to call in. I would like to hear what you have to say. The phone number is 715-388-7155. And just before the break, we were discussing this new program from the University of Wisconsin-Madison for pharmacy students. And it's going to help Wisconsin have more pharmacists, which is a good thing. One of the big parts of this new program is the fact that a student can start in a pre-pharmacy program at any of the 13 UW schools around the state, and then move to UW-Madison when it comes time to move into the pharmacy program. Does that make sense the way I explained it? I hope so. I'll get back to this story that's in UW-Madison News at news.wisc.edu. And where I left off here, it says, pharmacists play a critical healthcare role across Wisconsin, particularly in underserved communities. Quote, pharmacists are essential members of the healthcare team as medication experts, says Stephen Swanson, dean of the UW-Madison School of Pharmacy. This new program helps us address the needs of the over 250,000 Wisconsinites who live in areas such as some rural communities that lack sufficient access to healthcare, end quote. Students can apply for PharmD Early Assurance as soon as they receive their admission offer from a UW System university. Current UW System students must apply before the end of the first semester of their first year by December 30th. And there is more information here. Oh, I should give you this quote, too. This is a quote from the assistant dean of PharmD Recruitment. That's the name of this program, PharmD. He says, we know there are great future pharmacists across the state of Wisconsin. This program provides a pathway for a student who would like to study at a UW System university and then train at the highest ranked pharmacy school in Wisconsin and then remain in the state to serve their local community as a pharmacist, the most accessible healthcare professional. Jeremy Altshaffel, I believe is how that's pronounced. He's the Assistant Dean of PharmD Recruitment and Admissions at the UW-Madison School of Pharmacy. So hopefully that'll mean good things for the future when it comes to filling those roles at drugstores, pharmacies, other retail outlets where pharmacists are needed. Got 9:39 right now, and the next story I want to get to is a commentary piece I found at the Wisconsin Examiner by the editor-in-chief, Ruth Conniff. And the headline here says, "Lawless MAGA Republicans are trying to overthrow democracy." Mm-hmm. She gets right to the point. She says, "These are not normal times." Still, as Will Bunch observed in a powerful column for the Philadelphia Inquirer, out of force of habit, laziness, or just plain denial, a lot of journalists continue to treat the Republican presidential contest as if it were a regular political event instead of the lawless authoritarian movement it really is. The Republican Party has been hijacked by Donald Trump. His enablers here in Wisconsin are part of a destructive cabal that is undermining democratic institutions and the rule of law. That's the context around Wisconsin Supreme Court Chief Justice Annette Ziegler's denunciation of the rogue lawlessness of the new liberal court majority for daring to set procedural rules. Ziegler's claim that the court's 4-3 liberal majority has staged a coup and conducted an illegal experiment by choosing a new administrator of state courts and changing some procedural rules is demonstrably false. In a calm, clear email response grounded in reality and the Wisconsin Constitution, Justice Rebecca Dallet explains why Ziegler is wrong. The Wisconsin Constitution clearly states that a four-person quorum of justices constitutes a majority for the conduct of the court's business, including setting internal operating procedures. The Chief Justice exercises, quote, administrative authority pursuant to procedures adopted by the Supreme Court, end quote. Ziegler doesn't have a leg to stand on. From one angle, this looks like a tempest in a teapot. Dueling late August memos about internal court procedures don't generally rise to the level of headline news. But the battle for control of the Wisconsin Supreme Court by a right-wing minority that lost its power in the recent spring election is part of a bigger plot by MAGA Republicans to flout the will of the voters and entrench minority rule. Take this week's seemingly unrelated AP story about the right-wing groups preparing to gut the federal government if they succeed in getting Trump reelected. Project 25, funded by the Heritage Foundation and fueled by former Trump administration officials, quote, is essentially a government in waiting for the former president's second term, AP reports. The idea is to, quote, gut the administrative state from within by ousting federal employees they believe are standing in the way of the president's agenda and replacing them with like-minded officials more eager to fulfill a new executive's approach to governing, end quote. The Project 25 handbook includes a suggested purge of tens of thousands of federal employees, replacing civil service jobs with patronage positions, stopping the FBI from working to curb the spread of misinformation, and stepped up prosecution of anyone who helps provide abortion pills by mail. It's scary stuff. Anti-government rhetoric has been a Republican staple for decades. Let me repeat that line. Anti-government rhetoric has been a Republican staple for decades. But the willingness to spread lies, destroy democratic institutions, and subvert elections to hold on to power is something new. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss has threatened to launch impeachment proceedings against Justice Janet Protasiewicz unless she recuses herself from a challenge to the Republicans' gerrymandered voting maps. By stating the truth during her campaign that the current maps are rigged to give Republicans a disproportionate legislative majority, an observable fact with which a federal court, a majority of Wisconsin voters, and even Voss himself have agreed, Protasiewicz opens herself up to corruption charges if she doesn't disqualify herself, Voss says. The impeachment threat, like the caterwauling by the Chief Justice, is absurd. By the way, if you're just tuning in, I am reading from a piece in the Wisconsin Examiner from Ruth Conniff. This is an opinion piece, and I'll continue. It says the judicial branch, as a co-equal branch of government, has its own recusal rules. Those rules do not require justices to recuse themselves from cases because of remarks they made during a campaign. If the legislature intervenes and impeaches a justice who follows the rules, it violates the separation of powers among the branches of government. But the emboldened right-wing majority in the assembly might give it a try anyway, as the Washington Post reports, in order to set up a process by which the Republicans can block a gerrymandering lawsuit that could diminish their power. The point would not be to convict Protasiewicz of anything, just to gum up the workings of the court long enough to slow down a challenge to the gerrymandered map. A successful impeachment vote in the assembly would force a justice to stop hearing or weighing in on cases until the Senate holds a vote on removal from office. Given the Senate's track record of delaying confirmation hearings for Democratic Governor Tony Evers' nominees, it's easy to foresee the foot-dragging that would ensue, at least until the 2024 election is over. On the same day the dueling memos between the new Wisconsin Supreme Court majority and the power-grabbing right-wing minority came out, the Senate held a public hearing on whether or not Wisconsin Elections Commission Administrator Megan Wolf should be allowed to continue in her job. 9:47 right now. Got to take a quick break. Stick around. It's a short one. You are tuned in to the Stu Daniels Show.
Clouds so swift, the rain falling in. Gonna see a movie called Gunga Din. Pack up your money, pull up your tent, McGuinn. You ain't a going nowhere. Ooh-wee, ride me high. Tomorrow's the day that my brides are gonna come. Ooh-wee, are we gonna fly down into the easy chair?
Kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west-northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898, but 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
AM Radio provides always-on news, sports, talk, traffic, and weather reports. It also delivers vital emergency information when your community needs it most. A new bill in Congress would ensure AM Radio stays in your car. Because when cell and internet services are down, this free emergency service is critical. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress to support the AM Radio for Every Vehicle Act.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, sunshine, a high near 73. Mostly clear tonight, lows around 53. Sunny with a high near 79 on your Thursday. For Thursday night, partly cloudy, lows around 59. Friday, sunny, breezy, and a high near 87. Winds gust to 30 miles per hour.
It's 60 at our studios.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
Your cheating heart will make you weep.
Back to the Stu Daniels Show on this Wednesday morning. Music from Kitty Wells, doing a Hank Williams song. Kitty Wells, born on this date, August 30th, back in 1919. And I was trying to think of when she passed away. I guess it was 2012. Yeah, she lived a long life. Good for her. Put out a lot of great music, too. Hey, welcome back to the Stu Daniels Show. We've got 59 degrees in Eau Claire right now. It's 61 in Amory. Just before the break, we were going over a commentary, an op-ed piece from the Wisconsin Examiner by Editor-in-Chief Ruth Conniff, talking about lawless MAGA Republicans trying to overthrow democracy. And we are seeing that in a big way here in Wisconsin. She mentioned that journalists are continuing to treat the Republican presidential contest as if it were a regular political event instead of the lawless authoritarian movement that it really is. She also said the Republican Party has been hijacked by Donald Trump. And I will pick up here where I left off with a headline over the next piece saying, "Stop calling them conservatives." On the same day, the dueling memos between the new Wisconsin Supreme Court majority and the power-grabbing right-wing minority came out. The Senate held a public hearing on whether or not Wisconsin Elections Commission Administrator Megan Wolf should be allowed to continue in her job. The hearing went forward against the advice of legislative attorneys and Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call, who have held that the Senate does not have the power to remove Ms. Wolf. It featured MAGA cult members Michael Gableman, who was fired as head of the legislature's bumbling investigation. The word investigation is in quotation marks. Bumbling investigation of the 2020 election. And Racine County election conspiracy theorist Harry Waite, who is facing criminal charges for making fraudulent absentee ballot requests. One thing, Gableman, Waite, and Chief Justice Ziegler all have in common is that they supported Trump's challenge to the 2020 election results in Wisconsin. Had a lone conservative on the court, Brian Hagedorn, not voted with the liberal minority, Trump's challenge would have been upheld. Ziegler joined the MAGA team, or I should say Ziegler joined Team MAGA, and very, very nearly made the Wisconsin Supreme Court the only forum in the nation to allow Trump's spurious challenge to the election results to move forward. Let's stop calling these people conservatives. The Republican Party has devolved into a cult of personality, working to install a strongman in the White House who has been charged with 91 felonies and who could easily be convicted and sentenced before the 2024 Republican convention in Milwaukee. It's a real possibility that Trump could deliver his acceptance speech for the Republican nomination from prison. Wisconsin is going to play a key role in the next election, and defending democracy and justice in this state is going to be critical to preventing our country's slide into authoritarianism. To protect the elected majority on the state's highest court, theoretically, Protasiewicz could seek an injunction against the legislature and prevent them from impeaching her in violation of her free speech rights. In 2002, the U.S. Supreme Court held in Republican Party of Minnesota versus Waite that the First Amendment protects the rights of candidates for judicial election to announce their views on disputed legal and political issues. The opinion, written by conservative Justice Antonin Scalia, says here, time is of the essence, though. That lawsuit would have to be filed promptly to head off the legislature's impeachment delaying tactic. Another possibility is that Protasiewicz, if impeached by the assembly, could resign. Then Democratic Governor Evers could appoint another justice to take her place. Evers could choose someone like former Democratic Representative Chris Taylor or progressive Judge Everett Mitchell. The new appointee would finish out Protasiewicz's term, which runs until 2027. Protasiewicz could then run against MAGA Justice Rebecca Bradley in 2026. Given the outcome of recent Wisconsin Supreme Court races, it seems likely she'll win again. Meanwhile, the Wisconsin Department of Justice should file charges against Wisconsin's fake electors, one of whom, Robert Spindell, is still serving on the State Elections Commission. The only way to defeat the sheer chutzpah of the right-wing attack on democracy is by fighting back just as aggressively. Our future depends on it. That's the commentary piece from the Wisconsin Examiner, written by Editor-in-Chief Ruth Conniff, posted just this morning. And I agree with her. What do you think? Looks like we've run out of time for today. I want to thank you for tuning in. Hope you have a great day. Do something nice for somebody else today, and I'll see you tomorrow morning, 8 o'clock.
Bug Tussle, providing high-speed internet to rural Wisconsin. No data caps, no contracts. 877-227-0924. Call today to learn how you can get 3 months free. 877-227-0924.
I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out. Because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes, good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha, 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 ha.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Thanks for listening to your local Civic Media radio station. Learn more on our website, civicmedia.us.
93.5 The Tap. 93.5 The Tap. You're listening to 93.5 The Tap.
WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.